Okay, so as usual, two questions this week, and the shailas are as follows. One of them let's see if you could stomach this one. A woman swallowed a dental crown by accident. I didn't give the shear. No one picked it. Very good. And it wasn't to you guys. It was my Friday morning Zoom to Los Angeles. So a woman swallowed a dental crown by accident. They cost thousands of dollars. And usually when a crown falls out, it could be cemented right back in. It's not dangerous to swallow together with food and will likely pass through the person's system in a matter of days. If, like, you inhale and the crown goes down, that's dangerous. Then you need to go to an emergency room. But if you just swallow it with food, it's not dangerous, and it will come through, it will go through your system, it'll be fine. So the woman went online to find out how to deal with the situation, because, like, I don't know, it's a little disconcerting to find out that there's, you know, this foreign object going through your system. She didn't know, like, if it was dangerous or not. She didn't know if, like, she'd be, like, in an MRI machine one day and, like, poof, would just pop out of her stomach or something. So she went online to find out, and the Google told her that what you're supposed to do is to search through your bowel movements for several days until you find it, and then it could take up to 10 days. So it's 10 days of sifting through a lot of poop, right? So the purpose of doing this is not just to retrieve the crown, which is worth thousands of dollars, because otherwise you're literally flushing thousands of dollars down the toilet. How often do you get to do that? But also to give the person peace of mind that she doesn't have this foreign object in her system, you know. So to know, okay, it made it. It went out. Now I'm clean. Problem is, this happened just a couple of days before Shabbos, and it hadn't come out yet, and Shabbos was coming. So she wanted to know, is she allowed to do this on Shabbos? Right? That's Shiloh 1. Okay. Good.
His reason last week's loser won Friday morning.
Right. Yeah. I it is like an experiment I'm doing. If anyone's going to ever vote for a 30-minute share about poop. The second Shaila is one that I don't think you've heard yet, because it's pretty recent. There is, I don't know if you, I once did a shiur on the first half of this, but that's not the Shaila. This is like a follow up. This is like a PS to an old Shaila. A woman called me back, I'll tell you the old Shaila first. A woman called me up and said, or texted me that on one of the community WhatsApp groups, someone had let everyone know, had let all the women know that one of the big shetel machers. Oh. You know what I'm about to say?
Yeah.
What?
It was like a Vodazara hair from.
No, different one. That one of the big shetel machers started advertising that they take insurance. Right? So I mean, all you need is a prescription from a doctor that says you're suffering from hair loss, and then they'll bill your insurance company, and the insurance company will pay thousands of dollars for you to get a new shetel. And she's like, it doesn't sound right. Am I supposed to be doing this? Okay, so that was the old shaila. Here's what happened. So there is this scheme that insurance companies reimburse for shetels for those experiencing medical-related hair loss. So, like, medical-related, and like the shetel macher says, like, if you're uncomfortable going to your doctor about it, I have a doctor on staff who'll write a prescription for you. So on Shabbos, someone approached me. This is another Rav sent me this. On Shabbos, someone approached me that she got a prescription that she was experiencing non-specific hair loss. Any idea what that means? Non-specific? I don't know. Non-specific hair loss. And she felt justified in going to the Shetelmacher, right, with that prescription. So she went to the place in whatever town. I think if I say the town, everyone's, even though the person who does this, Mamish, advertises it in the newspaper, so it's not, whatever. But it's probably more than one Shetelmacher that does it. So she went to a certain place that has an arrangement where they are, quote, pre-approved. The way it works is that you buy a $4,000 Shetel, you pay $4,000 for it, and they give you a receipt for a bit over $5,000 to submit. So the woman got her $5,000 and change dollar receipt. She said, wait a second, I didn't pay $5,000, whatever, $5,200. I paid $4,000. So they said, yeah, we know, but rarely will the insurance company reimburse you for everything. They'll reimburse whatever, 80%. So if we give you a $5,000 receipt, you'll get reimbursed for the full $4,000, and then you'll be good. So she's like, oh, okay, that sounds reasonable. And she sent in the receipt for $5,000, and she got a check in the mail for $5,000. Now she just made $1,000 off of the insurance company, And even though she maybe didn't feel like what she was doing originally was insurance fraud, now she feels like it's insurance fraud. So what should she do? Meaning, what should she do? It means a number of things. It means buy more shapeful. It means for $1,000, good luck. Although, you know, like when we asked Rav Schechter about like you know, these shaitel issues, so about the lace top shaitels and the, you know, all that stuff. So Schechter's like, they should do like my wife. For $30, you buy a shaitel in a box, you wear it a few times till it gets disgusting, you throw it out, and you buy another one for $30. So right now you know Rav Schechter's shaitel. Or at least she tells him. $30. He has no idea. That's probably what it was 50 years ago when they got married. That's probably what she spent. Anyway, so the shaila is, first of all, what does she do with the money? Like, sometimes when you call up these places and you want to return the money, they'll tell you, what do you mean return the money? We don't have a mechanism to, like insurance company, we don't take donations. We're an insurance company. Like, you can't just donate money to an insurance company, right? Like, that's not... So they don't have a mechanism to receive the money. If they don't have a mechanism to receive the money, then, like, what are you supposed to do with the money? Then the shaila is she obligated to tell the insurance company, oh, by the way, you're being defrauded by a firm person who's selling shaitels to, Orthodox ladies whose husbands make $3 million a year as partners in law firms and have, but they're chapping with $4,000, whatever. Like, you know, you're being defrauded of the, you know, because everyone has non-specific hair loss after shkoyach, after covering their hair for 15 years, they have non-specific hair loss. You know, it's that their hair is not going to be the same. But is that, what would be the problem with telling the insurance company about that? Masira, right? Is that a problem in Masira? So she's at a loss what to do. So that is shaila number two. Before we vote, just to let you know, if you vote for shaila number one, you also have to come up with the title of how I'm supposed to post that on Wani Torah. Okay? Those are the, that was someone, a friend of mine who's a dentist who... What? Oh, what was that? So, oh, good. Of bowel movements in Borer. Okay, good. making a mess of mukta. Okay, all right. We have a view. Okay. A friend of mine who's a dentist, who heard me ask that shaila on Friday morning, said. He said, first of all, it's maisim b'chol yom. Like, people swallow their crowns, they come out, dentist cleans it off, he knows what to do, he's got this, disinfects it, and he said two things. He said, first of all, you're going to have to come up with a title for that year if you're supposed to share. But he said, second of all, it's not nearly as disgusting as you think it is, and there's something only a dentist would say. He said, you have more bacteria in your mouth than you have at the other end, and quite frankly, anything that comes out of your mouth is more disgusting. That
wait, they put it back?
They put it back.
Oh.
That's what they disinfect it, and they put it back. They clean it up, you know, and disinfect it and put it back in your mouth. It's thousands of dollars to get a new one. So those are the two shaylas. So before we run out of time, let's take a vote. All those who prefer shayla number one of bowel movements in Borer, please raise your hand. Okay, all those who prefer shayla number two of returning insurance fraud.
They're both gross, honestly.
they're both gross. Yeah. I hear that. Okay, so let's talk about returning the insurance fraud. What happened now when you steal from an insurance company, which is, let's make no. Let's try not to to make this sound any more pleasant than it is. This is stealing from an insurance company. Out and out stealing from an insurance company. When you steal from an insurance company, who did you steal from? I mean, what's an insurance company? Is it like the guy who owns the insurance company? Who did you steal from?
Don't we say that owners, like companies, are different than
So on the one hand, you can look at it as like you stole from a company, whatever the company is. You stole from whatever that entity is. And you're not allowed to steal from anybody, right? But you've also, in a certain sense, although maybe not directly, stolen from every customer of that, every client of that company. because insurance companies are going to make money. They're not, you know, they have actuaries that work for them that figure out what they need to charge in premiums in order to be, you know, based on how much they pay out, and you know, that have all these models that figure all this stuff out. And insurance companies are going to make money in the end of the day. So they're going to, the premiums will be raised. It might be a minuscule amount for each of the, you know, they have hundreds of thousands of, you know, people that buy insurance from them. So, okay, so you stole Pachas Mishav Pruta from a million people, so that you're like the Dora Mabel. Okay, you know, Shkayach. But like, you've stolen from everybody in a certain sense, right? So what do you do if you've stolen from the Tzibur? Or if you stole from people, you can't even identify who you stole from. Or if you stole from somebody, let's say the insurance company, who doesn't have a mechanism to take it back.
It's Gemara Babasra.
No, what does Gemara Babasra say?
It says if you don't know how to return it, you don't return it.
And then what do you do with it?
Keep it,
no? So the Gemara in Beitza Daf Chavtes tells us, Misha Gazal Ve'in Yodea Mimi Gazal. This isn't exactly the case, because you do know who you stole from, sort of. But Misha Gazal Ve'in Yodea Mimi Gazal, Yasabem Tzarchi Rabin. You're supposed to use the money to donate toward Tzarchi Rabin, toward the masses. And the Gemara says that Abishol ben Butnis gathered 30 barrels of wine based on what the buyers didn't have the patience to wait for, because what would happen is, the way they would buy wine in those days is, you didn't buy a bottle of wine where you buy the bottle together with the wine. You would come with your flask of wine or your barrel of wine, and the seller would have his barrels, and he would empty out his barrel into your barrel, because he wasn't willing to give you his barrels, he was willing to give you the wine. It's like, you know, now that when you go to Gourmet Glot, you got to bring your Target bags, right? Like, and they just dump the stuff into the bags that you bring. But when you're dealing with a liquid that has to be poured out, so when you pour it out, it's like whoosh, the whole thing comes out, except it's not everything. Then you leave it, you know, tilted for a while, and slowly the last drops come out. Now, it's most people don't have the patience to wait for those last drops to come out. Like, I don't care about those last drops. Just pour the thing into my barrel, and like, I'll get that first gush, and now that it's kind of full, and I'll go home with that. And you know, it's like you know, that's like whatever. It doesn't have to be Gourmet Glot. Whatever supermarket you shop at, you know. So you just did shopping $350. So you give them, the charge was $349.96. So you take out $300 bills and a 50, because, I don't know, you're a drug dealer, you have a lot of cash, and you give them $350, and like, they're like, they're like, get distracted and trying to do the math, and it's like, for 4 pennies, like, how long are you going to wait for the 4 pennies? Usually not very long, like, you go, okay, whatever, it's okay on the 4 pennies. So people didn't wait for the 4 pennies to drip out of the wine barrel. So the Sabbath Shulman Buttons would have all these barrels of wine, over time, 300 barrels of wine, just from the leftovers that people left behind in the store, and he would just gather it over time, and he didn't know what to do with it. And friends of his, the Gemara said, had 300 jugs of oil that they gathered the same way, and they brought the barrels to the Gizbarim in Yerushalayim, to the treasurers in Yerushalayim, to do Tzarchei Hekdesh with them. And the Gemara says that the Chachamim informed them, you don't have to do Tzarchei Hekdesh with this, because you didn't really steal anything. The people were mochel. You know, when you leave the store and you say, forget about the 4 pennies, or you just leave the store without saying it, everyone knows you're mochel in those 4 pennies, so you don't have to do anything. So Abishol and his friend said, yeah, but we still don't want to benefit from something that doesn't really belong to us. So they said, okay, hol v'chmartem al atzmechem, asumeyem Tzarchei Rabim. So since you're machmir yourself, so do Tzarchei Rabim with it. Do something that everyone's going to be able to benefit from. And it's based on a brisa that tells us that when you steal money and you don't know who you stole from, you do Tzarchei Rabim. That's halacha. We pass in that way in Shulchan Aruch and Chosh Mishpat, Simen Shin Samach Vav, Siv Beis, Gozal Vein Yodem, Mimi Gozal, Yasabot Tzarchei Rabim. So the Sma on the Sefer Mira Sinayim, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch and Chosh Mishpat, explains why Tzarchei Rabim. Right? Why not do any other mitzvah? Why not find an ani, you know, find a guy who's learning in Kolel and has no money in Eretz Yisrael or something, and 12 kids, you know, something like that, and anonymously drop off an envelope at his house. Why Tzarchei Rabim? So the Sma explains, no, it's Dafka Tzarchei Rabim, because you want that the victim should be able to benefit from what you're paying for. Meaning, if you just targeted to a particular ani, the victim of your crime isn't going to get paid back in any which way. But if you do tzorchei rabim, maybe HaKadosh Baruch will be, HaKadosh Baruch runs the world, and he'll make sure that the victim in some way will be able to benefit for that which you paid for, and in that way it will be at least a little bit like you're paying him back. And the Aruch HaShulchan elaborates, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does that HaKadosh Baruch Hu habalitar mesayin lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for someone who tries to do tshuva, just has no clear path to tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make things work out, so he'll make the victim, Hashem will make it, that the people who were wronged will benefit from the item. But the Sma says, you still need to do all the work to figure out who you stole from, because that's not a full, a complete fulfillment of paying it back. It's a partial fulfillment, because you're getting tzorchei rabim. What if you know that the nignav will not benefit from what you're doing? He lives b'medina sayam. He lives somewhere, he lives on the other side of the world. And you're going to do tzorchei rabim, but, he's never here. So are you completely potter, or do you have to get rid of the money? So that's a discussion in Poskim. And the tshuvas, Yismach Levav, or Chaim Simon Gimel, he was asked about paying for Neros Chanukah in a shul with such money. And he said that, since the purpose is that the Nigzal should ultimately benefit, he said, you shouldn't do something that's as fleeting as Neros Chanukah. Because it could be the whole community will benefit from the Neros Chanukah, but maybe for that week, for those 8 days, the Nigzal won't show up to shul that week. So you shouldn't do something so fleeting like Neros Chanukah. You want to dig a bore so that they can have a mayim that will be there forever. Something that's going to be, pay for something in the, a shul building where they're going to come back and they're going to be able to use it. That when Mashiach comes, the building is going to be moved to Eretz Yisrael. I think they say Rabbi Beryl Wine says that he was building his shul in Muncie, or maybe the yeshiva in Muncie, I don't remember. The builder said, there are two kinds of wood we could use for the paneling. There's this cheaper wood that will last about 50 years, and then there's a much more expensive wood that lasts 150 years. And he said he couldn't bring himself to buy the more expensive wood for the 150 years. He said, if you think we're going to be in Gullus for another 150 years, I cannot make that commitment that we're going to be in Gullus for another 150 years. But the Kasha, of course, is Bati Knesios and Bati Midrashos go to Teretz Yisrael. Okay, so whatever the Teretz is. But, you should build infrastructure that the children, the grandchildren of the victim, the Yarshim of the victim maybe, will benefit from. The Or Sameach writes in the Tshuva, the Or Sameach wrote Tshuvas also, the Or Sameach wrote, what did the Or Sameach write in addition to Or Sameach? So the Meshchachma, right? So Meshchachma was when, I think the story goes that when he was sick and he couldn't, the doctor said it was too stressful for him to be involved in that level of Iyun, so he wrote Meshchachma instead. Sefer on the Parsha, which was, he tricked them. Because everyone, Sefer on the Parsha. No, it's not. Every piece is a sugya and shas. He just, did it through the Parsha. It's like some people, they see lumdus everywhere. So he found lumdus in Pshat and Chumash. That was his, some people are able to find their way. It's like Rabbi Abraham Tversky, Zichron Levracha, Rabbi Dr. Tversky used to say, when everyone said, it's amazing, you wrote 112 books or something. He's like, no, I wrote one book. I wrote a book that says you have to have self-esteem. I just one time wrote it in Vartlach of the Parsha, one time I wrote it in Hasidish Stories, one time I wrote it in Psychological Jargon, one time, but it's all the same book. It's all just, so some people could see the same thing everywhere. So anyway, so in Tshuva Sar Smeach, Chaim Chaim Velazhner said that a kolo that learns Torah is something that everybody benefits from, because learning Torah protects the whole city. So that's an interesting thing, that Dafka to pay for a kolo, since that's Gemara Babasra, right? That the Talmid Chacham don't have to pay for the police force and the walls of the city, because their Torah is protective in its own right. Rav Meisha has a tshuva in Chosh Mishmach El Galvsim Peches, where he was asked about, can you give tzedakah with this money? And he said, absolutely not. He said, it doesn't fulfill the purpose. He said, you should give to a mikveh or to some other tzarchei rabin. And even if you stole from the kupa shel tzedakah, you have to give it back to the kupa shel tzedakah totally anonymously. Because you can't have it that you're getting credit for making this donation. Oh, Big Veer, such a nice guy. Everyone's going to, oh, what a tzaddik. It's a stolen money that you're returning. You're not allowed to get any credit whatsoever. So how do you return money to an organization that serves the rabbin? Right? You have this kind of organization. So I saw Rav Asher Weiss has a very brief tshuva on this topic. I don't think it's published in any of his Minchas Ashers, but online, in one of the Rav Asher Weiss websites, there are a few that have his Torah base, and there's another one. So it has tshuva from Rav Asher, and he says, you know, hinenish alti pa'amim rabbos. He says, I've been asked a lot of times on a very common issue that comes up. Someone who damaged or stole from an entity that you don't have the ability to pay back to. What happened was a guy was driving and he hit right into a telephone pole and he damaged the telephone pole. He was texting probably, right? And he damaged the telephone pole. So he owes the telephone company money. So you call the telephone company and you try to pay them, right? What do they tell you? Oh, what's your account number? No, I don't have an account with you. I just want to pay you. You know, I don't even like live here. I don't have, my account is with Verizon, and I'm in Arizona, and like whatever, whoever's there, right? Whatever company is there. I don't know. So I just want to pay you. It's not that I. And what do they tell you? They tell umitor libo tziltzel lechevra tachashmal. You know, out of the goodness of his heart, he calls up the electric company, ubikesh l'shalim to minizikin, and he wants to pay. La'achar shuavar mipakid lepakid mimachlakazu lemadur zeh. You know, he was sent from one guy to one supervisor to the other, from this office to that office. It's like, oh no, someone wants to give us money. What do we do now? Is it, like, whose job is this? And they're freaking out. They tell him, I'm sorry, we cannot take your money. We have no ability to take your money. Ukiyotzi b'zeh. To have a government things. So what do you do in such a case? So it happens to be I was talking to a guy in my shul about this, who's a lawyer, who said that he had a medical insurance issue where they gave him too much money for whatever reason, whatever the issue was, and he didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to deal with the medical insurance companies, and his father-in-law is a doctor who deals with medical insurance companies a lot. His father-in-law said, just try, send him a check, see what happens. And he sent them a check, and then they cashed it. That was it. So I guess maybe you could just try it. Meaning, if you call them up, they might freak out. Maybe just send a check, and you know, the check will get to the right place, and they'll figure out what to do with it. But anyway, so Rav Asher Weiss was asked about this. Lonias daiti nira dekolki agavna pater humi l'shalim aflat seisi de shemayim. You're pater from paying. Wow, even to be yotzei de shemayim. How does that work? Why are you putting? You stole from them. You damaged them. Adamul the olam. If you're a mazik, right? How are you putter from paying? V'kimet shaguf anizik lo toruch la'afshir le'ilam mafsidim also shiuchlu l'shalim have l'kilu machal zuchuso. Why? Because the insurance company was mochel. When they went around from office to office and then said, you know what? You just can't pay. That's their mechila. And when you owe somebody money and they're mochel, you're putter from paying. You don't have to do tzarchi ram with it. It's yours now. But if you do it, it's a mitzvah chasidus. You agree with Rav Asher Weiss or not? This woman could keep $1,000 if she tries to pay back the insurance company and they say no?
The other clients were mochel, just the companies.
Oh, so if you view it as stealing from the company, enoch nami. But what if you view it as, like we said before, stealing from each of the clients of the company? They weren't all mochel. Yeah?
The fact that all the workers are just passing on to the next person is proof that like they don't really care, so they're not really the person that's being over.
Okay, meaning if you were to ask, you know, the people that are really, you know, responsible for the bottom line of the company, these are salaried employees, and ask a shareholder, you know, ask somebody, and they wouldn't be mochel. I hear that. You could also argue a couple of things. First of all, you could argue that all the clients are mochel because the clients are interested in setting up an efficient. They don't want to. I don't want just because I buy insurance with this company. I don't want to have to deal with every time a minor issue comes up. I want the company to be set up in an efficient way that they should deal with their issues. It happens to be it's inefficient for them to hire somebody to deal with donations to the insurance company because donations don't often come into an insurance company. By the way, someone told me you can make a donation to the federal government. if you write a check to the federal government, you know, a donation, a tax deductible donation, you can make a donation to the federal government. I don't know how often that happens, but they have an account set up that you can do that. But if what?
Tax deductible, it just sounds like taxes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, so it's very interesting. So so it could be that that is their mechila. It could be that that's their mechila. But I think in this case, it's a little bit different. This is not the same. This is not a case where, you know, you hit a telephone pole and you call up the company and you tell them, look, I hit a telephone pole, I need to pay somebody back. No, this case is totally different. This case, you're not giving them all the information. You're telling them, I just want to make a donation. I want to give you money. Oh, you accidentally gave me too much. That's not what happened. You defrauded them. And you defrauded them because this place that wrote you the receipt defrauded them. So that's not... If you give them that information, I'm sure they have a way. They will immediately get their legal team on it. And the Sheitel Macher would be in hot water, and you would be... They would immediately get... And the New York Post would have... Meaning, this whole... shtick that's going on, right? It's not a shaila like if it's going to be in the New York Post. The shaila is just what the date on the top of the paper is going to be, right? Meaning, it's amazing to me that some people just like can't see beyond like 2 inches in front of them, like a little bit of chachamim of Barosho, at least to see a little bit where this is going to head. Is this going to end in a Kiddush Hashem? I mean, like it's unbelievable to me that like people can't see that. But anyway. Is she allowed to tell them, though? Is she allowed to master? So it's not so pashut that she's allowed to master, though. Masira is a very tricky thing. The Gemara, first of all, says like very horrible things for people who master. That you can't master. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch passes, even if a person is a bad person, if it's about money, you have to pay damages if you cause damages from Masira. If a person is a rodef, you can kill him, the Shulchan Aruch says, or cut his tongue out to prevent him from mastering. Meaning, if you view the Moser as a rodef, so then you're allowed to kill the Moser. Meikar Adin, we don't recommend this anymore. But the Rama writes that if a Jew rightfully owes money to a non-Jew, like taxes, when the government just takes the money out and doesn't imprison people, then there's no Isser Misira. But the Rama advises against it because it says like Meshav Aveda Shalakum, which you're not really supposed to do. So even if he rightfully owes money to a non-Jew, the Rama advises against it. And that's only if they're just going to take the money from him. What if they're going to throw him in jail? So you know, is that even though he may deserve it, but is that are you allowed to be the person that does that? So there are a number of mahalchim that apply when it comes to Masira. What if you have a just government, a fair government? So the Aruch HaShulchan Chosh Mishpah Shem Peiches says, no, if you have a government that has a fair system of law, none of these dinim of Masira apply. Of course you let a master to a government that has a fair system of law. And he says, like, you know, the Russian government and the where I live, where the Melech is such a wonderful person and everything is so great, and that, you know, but so half the poskim say, of course, the Aruch HaShulchan wrote that. The censor was like Mamash looking over his shoulder as he's writing, you know, and he's like, yes, and they are wonderful to us. I mean, you know, so, but they're medayik. If you look at that Aruch HaShulchan, he says, like in places like where I live in Russia and in Great Britain, where it's a just government, then these demons don't apply. Why did he throw in Great Britain? Because Mistama, because he knew that everyone's going to realize that he only wrote Russia because of the censors, so he wanted to let people know that he was serious about this. So he gave an example that had no sheichus to him, and that the halacha applies in such a case as well. Pashtus is that's why he did it. Other poskim say that the Pesachei Choshen quotes, Blay quotes, that our system is not a just system because they interrogate people and they force confessions out of people. Well, you shouldn't have so much confidence in our system. Rav Moshe, surprisingly, in three different places, sounds like he holds that the Yisrael Mesira remains unchanged even in just countries, even in fair countries. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about that you're not allowed to inform on a forger of kashra symbols, even though he deserves it, and it's a fair, just country that we live in. In Chosh Mishpah Chelek Aleph Sim Sadi Beis, he talks about why you're allowed to be an auditor for the IRS And he says, not because it's a fair, just country, you're allowed to be an auditor, because if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it anyway. So it's not like you're going to be the most brilliant auditor ever, where you're going to catch everything that nobody else would catch. The next guy down the list, what did they call it? Value above replacement, or something like that, right? Wins above whatever. So it's not that great, as an auditor. The next guy will be just as good. And Rav Moshe Nor Chaim Chelke says that you can't inform because the punishment is against the halacha. Other poskim are not so convinced. They think that if the person is a criminal and they're doing something wrong, then it's okay to maser. So, some of the Rav Vosner writes, one of the things we expect of non-Jews is that one of the Shevet Mitzvah Yonof, they have to set up a system of law. So what? We're going to ask them to set up a system of law, and then we're going to totally disregard that system of law? I mean, how do we talk out of both sides of our mouth at the same time? That's one of the svaras, one of the more compelling svaras for Dina d'Malchus Adina. But it's at least a thorny issue whether you're allowed to master in such a case, and it needs to go to Gedolei HaPoskim. So what's the proper etzus? I think the proper etzus is to call them up and say that you convinced the store to give you a later discount or something, something like that. You have to say that you got too much money, more money than you spent. Make it clear to them that you got more money than you spent without telling them that it's fraud. Unless you get a psak that you're allowed to master and that you're allowed to tell them that it's fraud. But I think that would be the answer. But most important, don't do this in the first place. If you want to go in the first place, the first $4,000 is not. You have to give it all back. The first because you got some doctor that sits next to you in shul to write your prescription, or the doctor that they have on staff by the Shetelmacher. So it's a specialty in medicine now. What are you going into? I'm going on fertility medication. I'm going on oncology. I'm going into Shetelmacher prescription writing. Right? That's terrible. So you shouldn't have done it in the first. Place. She probably has to give back the whole amount of money, not just some of the money. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.